Yeah, thanks everyone for being here today. My slides all say Ohio State, but I'm a very recent addition there. I've been there for about 2 months. So a lot of this research that I'm presenting today is a culmination of my dissertation research that was completed at Purdue. So a lot of you in the room are probably familiar with how we're using data in agriculture. So this is a common yield map, and a lot of times farmers take these yield maps and either try to play with the data or will make a visual assessment of it to make decisions on how they're going to farm, including where they want to soil sample, what their fertilizer rate should be, you know, hybrid selection, or even, you know, variable rate populations. But the way that we're moving into the future with the interest in big data is many of these producers are going to begin to take their yield data and shoot it up into the cloud, where this data is going to be aggregated with many other farms' data, and then that will be used, analyzed and used to help them make these decisions. But this presents an entirely new set of challenges. Data quality was an issue even before, when we were just using our yield maps singularly to make decisions for that individual field. But as we begin to aggregate, we're going to have more questions that we need to ask. Not only is your own data high quality, but is other people's data high quality? Did they calibrate their combine? Are their fields similar enough to yours to help you make decisions? So the challenges that I see as we move into big data are, one, how do we ensure that the data is high quality? And two, how do we attach context to that data to make sure that we are using representative data to make decisions for our fields? So in this presentation, I hope that I will answer some of your burning questions about data quality, including one in my title. I said we're going to use data integrity zones. So what is a data integrity zone? And then a little more deep, how did I isolate this data in data integrity zones? And what implications and impacts did using these data integrity zones have on the data quality? So what is a data integrity zone? A data integrity zone is something that we decided within each field there are areas where errors and uncontrolled variation is reduced. So basically we can break a field down into its management zones to control the variation and also look at issues with the way the data was collected, either mechanically or issues with the environmental variation or even mistakes with agronomic management, and find zones where mistakes did not occur or where the combine performs while collecting data. And then once these zones are identified, we'll break the field down into management zones based on the yield driving factors within that field. And then the real key to this approach is to remove data where errors and artifacts are likely to occur blindly by zone without actually looking at the yield values themselves, which may create bias. So some of the things that we look at that we would consider an error or an artifact would be ramp up and ramp down issues in the combine data, or perhaps a washout zone in the field where we might have planted seed there, but the yield response is no longer representative of what we believe that treatment was. Or even as simply as if you're looking at your soil types, we all know that some of that Sorgo data isn't as cut and dry as we think, and there are inclusions in our fields that may not be accounted for in those maps. And then I think a lot of us have dealt with a farmer who decided at the end of the year that it's a whole lot easier to run diagonally through the field, and all of a sudden you have a different issue to approach. So how did we look at the field and isolate this data that we believe might be high quality? So first I want to tell you a little bit about the field that I'm going to use as an example. I had 10 years of yield data collected at the Southeast Purdue Ag Center. It's clear down there. And if you know about this area, it's a little more hilly. There's a lot more trees. So it shouldn't surprise you that this is an oddly shaped field. It's about 14 and a half acres. It has 5 different soil types represented. And then it has about 25 feet of elevation change from one end to the other. So that's hard to, there's the pointer. That's hard to visualize what 25 feet of elevation change looks like within 15 acres. This is hard because I cannot see the, there it is. So imagine that you're driving here on the high spot of the field with your combine, and you're coming down along through the corn, and you're about full. So you start looking around to find your grain cart driver, and he is nowhere to be seen. So you say a few words, and you get a little angry, and you're about to pull out your cell phone and call him to say, you know, where are you? Maybe not quite that nicely. And then as you top over the crest of the hill, you see that here he is, patiently waiting for you at the bottom of the hill. That is how big, in that small of a field, 25 feet of elevation changes. It will swallow an entire tractor and grain cart, and then you feel terrible that you were so mean to your driver. So this is pretty typical. This was a nice field. The data was fantastic. It was very uniform. There were no treatments within the field because, I mean, who's going to put plots or treatments on here for research? Nobody in their right mind. So it provided a good baseline for us to look at yield differences based on the spatial variation and the temporal variation. So the approach that we took to taking this data was, first I used buffers. So I don't want to make this sound like it was easy, but it takes about 30 seconds to explain it and days to do it. So using ArcGIS, I created buffers to eliminate first the end rows and the ramp up and ramp zone, ramp down zones for the combine at the end of each field. Then I took the soil type maps and used a buffer to remove the data from the areas where the lines are, just in case there's some sort of ambiguity or changes occurring there. And then thirdly, in this field, there's a pretty terrible gully because their waterway, you know, as nature sometimes decides, isn't where it thinks it should be. So in that area, pretty consistently from year to year, there was no crops at the end of the season. So that area was removed to make that more representative. So this is the part that, if you are really like, you like collecting data and holding on to it, you might want to close your eyes for this slide. So this is the beginning yield map. When I applied the first buffer, which was the end rows, it removed 60% of the data. When I applied the soil type buffer, it increased to 72% of the data removed. When the gully was removed, we're up to 70, just a little over 73%. And then in 1 year, my combine operator drove diagonally. So then we have turning in the middle of the field. So when I removed that, we're up to 76% removed. So yes, at this point my stomach started hurting and I thought that I would have no significant results because all of my data was gone. So is there, and we removed so much data, the question became, is there really a difference? Is this data, all that data, really bad? So the first thing we looked for is, when you think about how a combine collects data, there's two criteria we look for. You want it to be at a consistent speed and you want a consistent mass flow. So this is a CV of speed for, in the blue bar, the areas where the data was collected that we removed. And the green bar is for the areas where we kept the data. And as you can see, there's a big decrease in variation in speed of the combine in the data collected in the data integrity zones. And then we see a similar story with the mass flow. So this meets the criteria of data that was collected at a steady state operation. So what impact did removing all of this data have on our results? We chose three different statistics to look at that we thought would quantify the data quality. And the first was the standard deviation. So in the raw data, our standard deviation was about 2 times higher than the DIS data. And in, to put some yield numbers to this, that's about 24 bushels of standard deviation in corn and 5 bushels in soybeans. The next statistic we looked at was the standard error. So this shows you how confident you are in your estimates. And actually, the bars look like we're losing, well, we are losing, we deleted 3/4 of our data, right? So we're losing some power of detection there. But if you look at the numbers, it's less than a bushel. So even though we're deleting 75% of our data, we're still really confident in those yield estimates. And then finally, looking at CV, again, our CVs decreased significantly with this smaller portion of data. So to put some actual numbers to this, this is the, for the corn years, looking at the whole field estimate. So this first column is the corrected yield estimate. So I took the total number of bushels removed from the field and divided it by the true area of the field to get these values here. In the second column, those are the values that are provided by SMS as your yield averages. And as you can see, we are underestimating yield using SMS in each year. This third column shows the field mean adjusted based on the DIS data. So the way this was calculated was by taking the average for each zone and extrapolating it to the area that that zone represented. And as I said earlier, there were 5 different soil types. We actually only had enough data in areas for 3 of the soil types. So in 2 zones, we had to use the most similar soil type to estimate that area to get a whole field estimate. So here, you can see we're splitting the difference. Some years were over, some years were under, but in most years we're closer. So on average, with the SMS average, we are 10% under estimating our yield, and we are 5% over on average with our adjusted DIS data. 2015, as you can see on there, we had a real big increase in how far off we were, and I think a lot of that was because that we had a ton of rain that year, and in the low-lying areas of that field where the data was removed, that soil type that we used to estimate that area truly was not representative of it because it was flooded out. So if we remove 2015, we still have a 10% underestimation of yield, but we become within 3% with our improved estimates. So what that looks like if we're looking at a five-year yield average. This is with the raw data, and there's quite a bit of variation temporally in that data, and our yield average comes out to about 145 bushels to the acre. When I talk to the farm manager there, he thinks that he gets closer to 170 on average out of that field. So if we look at the DIS data, as you can see, the variation temporally still exists, but there's our five-year average right at about 170. So the conclusions from this study are, one, the errors in the yield data don't really appear to be random or systematic, so they're not something that big data, the power of more data, will erase. They're still going to be biased in specific areas of the field. But the good news is it was pretty straightforward to efficiently remove these areas based on knowledge of the spatial variation in the field. And the removal of these areas led to more consistent and accurate estimates. And perhaps more importantly, as we're aggregating data, the estimates that we were getting from this approach are more precise and more representative of the things that we might be looking for. So, thank you.
We've got time for a couple questions here. So you can keep your procedure on many fields in many years. Do you think you'll always toss out like 3/4 of the data?
The question was, if I reproduce this over many fields, over many years, if I think that I would remove so much data. And my answer to that is no. I repeated it on one other field that had a more typical shape and only ended up removing about 30% of the data. I think that the reason that this field has such a high proportion of data removed is because of its odd shape. The perimeter to area ratio is really high because of that waterway that cuts through the middle of it. It's also a very small field. It's the downside of trying to find a field at a research farm that hasn't had a lot of different research experiments going on. It's going to be one that's highly variable. So I think this represents more of a worst case scenario. The question was, do I think that this can be automated? And I do think that it can be automated. I don't think that there's ever a situation where we're not going to need the knowledge of the farmer in this process. But I think that by looking at the field, once the initial assessment of the variation is done, I think it's pretty straightforward. And like, for example, when I applied this to other fields, I used a quick formula for the exterior buffer, like the number of end rows plus 15 or 30 feet, so that it made it really quick and easy to get a good idea of where to start and then make adjustments based on that.
Well, let's thank Elizabeth one more time for.